Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So I studied Arabic really seriously for like 6 or 7 years. I got a BA in Middle Eastern Studies in Arabic. I lived in Jordan and Morocco. And you know, that was like over 10 years ago at this point. But studying Arabic, even though it was so long ago, changed my ability to learn things. And I want to talk about why I think we should all be studying foreign languages, but what I learned specifically from studying a foreign language. So one of the things that I took from my Arabic study that I still use basically every single day is when I learn something new, a new word, a new idea, a new process, I immediately try to play with it and use it in context. So for Arabic classes, when I learn a new vocab word, I would try to very quickly put it into sentences. And I knew they would be wrong and they would be really clunky and it would be embarrassing. But the easiest way to learn how to use it correctly is to throw it into a context, not try to memorize the word and the definition, just try to use it. And think of that lesson applied to so many things in life, right? You learn a new thing, a new skill, and then you just put it into action. And then you see how it works, and then you adjust the course as necessary. Similarly, the second thing I learned is circumlocution, which is a word an English word I learned from studying Arabic. And it's this idea of using more words to say something that requires fewer, like to talk around something. So in the case of Arabic class, I would not know what the right word was, but I would need to say it. So I would just have to describe it using other words. I did this a lot when I lived abroad too. You just often don't have the right vocab. And you can apply this to contexts outside of the language classroom as well. Like when you might not know exactly how to do something or what something is called or where something is. And so you have to like be innovative and be strategic and talk around the thing to prove your point. Not having the exact right language doesn't disqualify you. Like, understanding its concept and the general idea can be enough if you can articulate yourself in that way. The final lesson I want to talk about here is something I think about all the time, and it is how much you can learn from the people who are also learning the same thing. In Arabic class, we were all struggling, right? Like, none of us were native speakers. We were all at the same level, theoretically. But I was on some programs where we had language pledges where we could not speak English. We all had to speak Arabic with each other, even if it was just the people in the class. No teacher, no nothing. And I have found, as I reflect on my Arabic classes, that I learned, honestly, I want to say more from my fellow students than I did my teacher, even. You watch the mistakes they're making, they correct yours, you work through the problems together, you have an intimate empathy and compassion for each other's struggle as you learn this that the teacher, frankly, just doesn't have. So you don't need to see the people who are at your level who also don't understand it or don't know it as incapable of teaching you. Quite the opposite, I think. And sure, maybe occasionally you'll learn something that is just actually wrong, like they will have led you astray because they thought it was right. But like in general, you stretch from learning with other people who are learning.
All right. What's going on, my friend? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Real English Radio. I'm your host, Tony Kaizen. And today we're talking about three important lessons from learning three languages. Now, that is the title of this episode, and I titled it that way because I'm learning my third foreign language at this point. I'm not fluent in that language. Not 100% confident that I will be one day, but that's besides the point. The woman you just heard in the audio clip, her name is Miriam Tenney. I'm almost positive I've used some of her clips on the podcast before. I'll leave a link to her TikTok in the description of this episode. So in her video clip, she's talking about three lessons that she learned from studying the Arabic language. Okay, so before we get into the actual lessons, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the clip and explain things bit by bit just to make sure you understand everything. And then we'll talk in more detail about the actual lessons. All right, my friend. So here we go.
So I studied Arabic really seriously for like 6 or 7 years. I got a BA in Middle Eastern Studies in Arabic. I lived in Jordan and Morocco. And you know, that was like over 10 years ago at this point.
Okay, so she studied Arabic really seriously or intensely or in a very dedicated manner for like 6 or 7 years. You often hear people use the word like or about before a period of time. And what they mean is approximately. So I studied for like 6 or 7 years, approximately 6 or 7 years. I studied for about 6 or 7 years, approximately 6 or 7 years. And then she says, I got a BA in Middle Eastern Studies. Now, a BA is a very common acronym that you'll hear, and it means Bachelor of Arts. It's an undergraduate college degree. Typically, the first degree you're going to get when you go to college. So you have your undergrad, I believe. After that is your master's, which is like a 2-year program. Then you can get your PhD. 4 years, 2 years, and then 150 fucking years. I don't know. But that's a BA, her undergraduate degree from university. And she got her BA in Middle Eastern Studies. Now, Middle Eastern, in this case, is an adjective, and it's referring to the geographical region that is the Middle East. When you hear somebody say the Middle East, they're referring to Western Asia and some parts of North Africa, like Saudi Arabia is considered to be part of the Middle East. Hopefully that helps you understand what part of the world I'm talking about. So she studied Middle Eastern culture and history in university, or at university, I should say. And then she lived in the countries Jordan and Morocco. She goes on to say, and you know, that was like over 10 years ago at this point. That's the last thing I wanted to explain. At this point, it just means at this current point in time. I mean, that's really what she's saying. It's like now it's been over 10 years. It's been over 10 years now. It's been over 10 years at this point. Does that make sense to you? It's not the most important thing in the world, but it is a phrase that you hear from time to time. All right. Let me go back a few seconds and we'll continue.
In Arabic, I lived in Jordan and Morocco. And you know, that was like over 10 years ago at this point. But studying Arabic, even though it was so long ago, changed my ability to learn things.
Okay, she says, that was 10 years ago at this point, but studying Arabic, even though it was so long ago, changed my ability to learn things. So what I want to explain is even though. This is a very important phrase. You're going to hear it very often. You're probably going to find yourself in situations where you need to use it very often. So even though is a phrase that we use to introduce a statement that contrasts or conflicts with something that you just said. So it's another way of saying even though is despite the fact that. So despite the fact that she studied Arabic over 10 years ago, she's still feeling the effects that it had on her ability to learn things. Even though it was so long ago, right? That's the first part of the sentence. Now I'm going to contrast that. Even though it was so long ago, even today, now, I'm still feeling the effects that it had on my brain and my ability to learn things. So it was a long time ago, but I'm still feeling the effects today, 10 years later. Even though this is true, this is also true. All right, let's continue.
And I want to talk about why I think we should all be studying foreign languages, but what I learned specifically from studying a foreign language. So one of the things that I took from my Arabic study that I still use basically every single day is when I learn something new, a new word, a new idea, a new process, I immediately try to play with it and use it in context.
Okay, so she said one of the things I took from my Arabic study that I still use basically every single day is blah, blah, blah. The word I want to explain is took, which is the past tense of the verb take. Now, in this context, it just means to gain something or, well, that's really the best word in this case, is to gain something from an experience. So what she took from her Arabic study, another way of saying that is what she gained or what she learned or one way that she benefited from her Arabic study. She was immersed in the language, and then she took a piece of knowledge or information or wisdom with her, and she continued down the path that is her life. She stopped here and learned Arabic, and then she took something with her. I hope that makes sense to you, because it's not like she took something physical. It's just an idea or an experience or a piece of wisdom. She took something from her Arabic study. And in this case, it's the idea that whenever she learns something new, particularly a new word or phrase, she tries to put it into context immediately. All right, let's continue.
One of the things that I took from my Arabic study that I still use basically every single day is when I learn something new, a new word, a new idea, a new process, I immediately try to play with it and use it in context. So for Arabic classes, when I learn a new vocab word, I would try to very quickly put it into sentences. And I knew they would be wrong and they would be really clunky and it would be embarrassing.
Okay. So again, she's talking about putting words into context as soon as she hears them for the first time. So somebody teaches her the word justice, and she immediately starts trying to play with it, which is another way of saying experiment with it, and put it into sentences. And she says, I knew they would be wrong, and she's talking about her sentences. I knew they would be wrong, and they would be really clunky. This is another important word. It's relatively useful. The word clunky in this context is like similar to saying awkward or difficult to handle or difficult to understand. Now, in other contexts, something that's clunky is usually something that is very big and solid and possibly even outdated. It's just like not useful anymore. It's the opposite of smooth. So if a machine is very clunky, it probably has a bunch of old parts that are outdated and can't really be used anymore, and it's making lots of noise and it's shaking when the machine is operating. It's just clunk, 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 making that kind of sound. It's very clunky. The opposite of that, a well-oiled, well-designed, modern machine would run very smoothly, right? Like an S-Class Mercedes-Benz, the engine just purrs at you. There's no clunk, 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 clunk. You know, there's no parts bouncing around and shit. It's very well-designed. The parts are running very, or the machine is running very smoothly. So a clunky sentence is one that sounds strange. You can tell that it's like maybe the grammar is a bit off. The word choice isn't great. Maybe the pronunciation is making it hard to understand. It's just not a well said or easily understood sentence. Or you might have a clunky conversation where it's a little awkward and uncomfortable. You're struggling to find things to say. Neither one of you seems to be enjoying it 100%. It's hard to communicate. It's a very clunky conversation. I hope that makes some kind of sense to you. And if it doesn't, just walk away with this simple idea. You have clunky sentences and conversations and smooth sentences and conversations. You can really think about it in those two basic terms. So she knew when using these new words for the first time, she's probably going to construct very clunky, unnatural, strange sounding sentences. And she knew it would be embarrassing, and she knew that it might not make the most sense, but she's still trying to use the things that she's learning. That's really what she's saying.
So for Arabic classes, when I'd learn a new vocab word, I would try to very quickly put it into sentences. And I knew they would be wrong, and they would be really clunky, and it would be embarrassing. But the easiest way to learn how to use it correctly is to throw it into a context, not try to memorize the word and the definition, just try to use it.
Okay, so the easiest way to learn how to use it, in this case, a word, the easiest way to learn how to use a word correctly is to throw it into context. Now, you probably get the idea of what she's saying. I just want to highlight the fact that very often when we're speaking informally, instead of using the word put, we use the word throw. For example, a different context, I might say, put that cell phone or put my cell phone in that bag. Or place, which is much more formal, place the cell phone in the bag. I'll probably never say that, but I would say, put my phone in the bag, please. Or I could say, hey, can you throw my phone in the bag? Can you throw it in the bag? That's a song. I can't remember who sings it. Just throw it in the bag. Da, 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 da. Just throw it in the bag. Who is that? Is that Fabulous or The Dream. I can't remember who sings that song. Anyway, throw is just an informal way of saying put in this context. So when she says throw a word into context, she means put it into context. It's just a more informal way of saying the same thing. It's very common in American English. All right.
Easiest way to learn how to use it correctly is to throw it into a context. Not try to memorize the word and the definition, just try to use it. And think of that lesson applied to so many things in life, right? You learn a new thing, a new skill, and then you just put it into action. And then you see how it works, and then you adjust the course as necessary.
All right, last thing from lesson number two, adjust the course as necessary. She's saying it's like that with everything in life, everything you learn. A new skill, a new word, whatever. You have to put it into practice. And then you just see how it works. And then you adjust the course as necessary. Now, adjust the course. When I hear this, I think of sailing for some reason. People out on a boat trying to navigate the open ocean. You know what I mean? But in informal speech, you can use this in many different contexts. It really just means change your direction or change the approach that you're taking to achieve a particular goal. And we use this after we've already gotten feedback. So imagine, well, let's use this context. You learn a new word and you try to throw it into context or put it into context. And you see, based on the person's reaction, the person that you're talking to, you can see based on their reaction that you didn't necessarily use that word in the most natural way, or they didn't totally understand what you said. So based on that feedback, now you know you have to make some adjustments or some changes. You need to try and use that word in a different way. You see what I'm saying? Might not be the best example, but hopefully you can understand what I mean by adjust the course. You're going down path A, and you try to use this word or this phrase or whatever, and you see that it wasn't perfect, so then you might adjust slightly and turn 20 degrees to the right, and now you're going in a slightly different direction. You have adjusted the course. You have changed your direction or your approach. But think about that figuratively, right? So just another way of saying that is make adjustments, right? You get the feedback and then you make adjustments. You get corrected and then you try again. That's a much more simple way of saying the same thing. All right, let's move on to lesson number three.
Similarly, the second thing I learned.
Sorry, this is lesson number two. Jesus, I don't want to lose you. I'm looking at my notes here. This is lesson number two that we're about to review. Here we go.
The course as necessary. Similarly, the second thing I learned is circumlocution, which is a word I actually, an English word I learned from studying Arabic. And it's this idea of using more words to say something that requires fewer, like to talk around something.
Okay, so lesson number two, she learned something called circumlocution. Now, the dictionary definition of this word is the use of many words where fewer would do, especially in a deliberate attempt to be vague or evasive. Now, that is a lot of words. Many of those words are very advanced. So a simpler way of saying that is using more words than necessary to arrive at your point or to explain yourself. That's probably the simplest way I can explain that word. And then she goes on to elaborate, right? She says, let me read it again. It's the idea of using more words to say something that requires fewer. Now, the word fewer, F-E-W-E-R, is often, how would I say this? People often use the word less when they should use the word fewer in English. Because when we're talking about quantities of something, something that you can count, you should say more or fewer. Fewer people, fewer words, fewer minutes, whatever. But a lot of people will say less people, less words, less minutes. And I don't know why, but I imagine it's because less is easier to say. But anyway, just a small detail. The idea of circumlocution is using many more words than you actually need to in order to express yourself. And then she says to talk around something, which is a much more natural way of expressing this idea. To talk around an idea basically means use a bunch of words to express your idea without expressing it directly, let's say. So you don't remember the word elevate. So instead of saying that word specifically, you just talk around that word. You use other words to describe the idea of elevation, hoping that somebody will understand what it is you're trying to say. I believe that's what Miriam is talking about here. All right, let me go back to the beginning of that part and we'll continue.
necessary. Similarly, the second thing I learned is circumlocution, which is a word I actually, an English word I learned from studying Arabic. And it's this idea of using more words to say something that requires fewer, like to talk around something. So in the case of the Arabic class, I would not know what the right word was, but I would need to say it. So I would just have to describe it using other words. I did this a lot when I lived abroad too. You just often don't have the right vocab. And you can apply this to contexts outside of the language classroom as well. Like when you might not know exactly how to do something or what something is called or where something is. And so you have to like be innovative and be strategic and talk around the thing to prove your point. Not having the exact right language doesn't disqualify you. Like, understanding its concept and the general idea can be enough if you can articulate yourself in that way.
Okay, so we're still talking about circumlocution, the idea of talking around something when you don't know a specific word or phrase or expression. And so Miriam goes on to say that you really can do this in any aspect of life, and many of us do this all the time in our native language. We just don't think about it that way. When we don't know a word or we don't know something's called or whatever, we don't have the exact words we need. We just talk around the idea. And the people listening more than likely will know what we're trying to say. Or they'll give us the word that we're looking for. And Miriam is saying that the same thing happens when you're speaking a foreign language. And not only that, but what stops a lot of people from talking is the belief that they don't have enough words to express themselves clearly. And Miriam says, like, not knowing the exact words or expressions does not disqualify you. And what she's saying is, just because you don't know a specific word or expression doesn't mean that you can't talk. You're still allowed to talk. You know what I'm saying? You don't, like, being fluent isn't a requirement for speaking a foreign language. In fact, it's the exact opposite. You need to speak, and if you want to be fluent. And I know that sounds obvious, but a lot of us forget that when we're immersed in the learning process, right? So just remember, just because you don't have all the words you would like to have doesn't mean that you're incapable of expressing yourself. Just understanding the general idea of what you're saying can be enough for you to articulate yourself. And so the word articulate basically means to express yourself or to express an idea in a very fluent and coherent way. It's very clear what it is you're expressing. It's very easy to understand you because you've chosen your words very well. You've expressed your idea in a way that's very easy to understand. It's very clear. So this is it's actually a noun and a verb. To articulate something means to express something with your words. But if someone is articulate, it means that they're very good at expressing themselves with their words. All right? Okay, my friends, let's move on to lesson number 3.
The final lesson I want to talk about here is something I think about all the time, and it is how much you can learn from the people who are also learning the same thing. In Arabic class, we were all struggling, right? Like, none of us were native speakers. We were all at the same level, theoretically. But I was on some programs where we had language pledges where we could not speak English.
Okay, so the final lesson. You should take the time, or what's a better way of saying that? You should recognize, or at least consider the idea, that you can learn from people who are learning the same thing as you. In other words, you can learn from other students and not just people who you think of as teachers. Because she references her Arabic class. She said that they were all struggling. You might have heard this word before. It's relatively common, but just in case you don't know, to struggle means to experience difficulty when you are making an effort to achieve something. You're having a hard time achieving this thing. So if everybody's struggling in Arabic class, everybody's having a very hard time understanding and using this language. She said none of them were native speakers. They were all at the same level theoretically or in theory, right? And then she goes on to say that they had something called a language pledge. Now, a pledge, P-L-E-D-G-E-S, pledges in this case, my bad, pledges. Or a pledge, Jesus Christ, take a shot every time you hear me say the word pledge. Fucking A. A pledge is a serious promise or a commitment. So if you pledge to only speak Arabic in this class, it means that you promise or you make the commitment to only speak Arabic during this class. So if they all had language pledges, it means that they all promised we are not going to speak English to each other. We are going to stay immersed in the Arabic language. All right?
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I believe that's where we stopped, so let me go back a bit and we'll continue.
Arabic class, we were all struggling, right? Like, none of us were native speakers. We were all at the same level, theoretically. But I was on some programs where we had language pledges where we could not speak English. We all had to speak Arabic with each other, even if it was just the people in the class. No teacher, no nothing. And I have found, as I reflect on my Arabic classes, that I learned, honestly, I want to say more from my fellow students than I did my teacher.
All right. So she says, we all had to speak Arabic with each other, even if it was just the people in the class. No teacher, no nothing. Now, technically, that's not like a, it's not a sentence, but it is something very common that you'll hear, at least in American English. So when you hear somebody say, no this, no nothing, they're just emphasizing the fact that there is absolutely nothing. So a bunch of students in the class who are waiting for a teacher to teach them, right? But the teacher's not there. So they don't really have any helpful resources to learn. There's no teachers, there's no books, there's no reference guides, there's no nothing. Hopefully you can at least get a sense of the sentence structure and understand that all we're doing is emphasizing the fact that we had nothing, you know? Like, I'm trying to think of another decent example. I started this business by myself with no help from anybody. No mentors, no investors, no courses, no nothing. Just me. You see what I'm saying? It's not that, you're not going to hear that every day. But if you can practice this, which I hope you do, and you master this sentence structure, this phrase, let's say, you will sound extremely natural in your next conversation. That's why I wanted to highlight this one. All right. So let me go back and play that part again.
Or even if it was just the people in the class, no teacher, no nothing. And I have found, as I reflect on my Arabic classes, that I learned, honestly, I want to say more from my fellow students than I did my teacher even. You watch the mistakes they're making, they correct yours, you work through the problems together, you have an intimate empathy and compassion for each other's struggle as you learn this that the teacher, frankly, just doesn't have.
Okay, so Miriam is going on to say that she actually learned more from her fellow students than she did her teacher. Now, the word fellow, F-E-L-L-O-W, fellow is really, a fellow is a man. Back in the day, they would say, oh, he's a kind fellow. See, he's a kind man, a kind gentleman. But these, when you hear the word fellow before a person, like student, fellow, teachers, fellow, bus drivers, fellow, astronauts, fellow, musicians, whatever, it just like, it's another way of saying my peers or people who are doing the same activity. For example, I might say, much love and respect to all my fellow podcasters, meaning all the other people that produce a podcast. Much love to y'all specifically, my podcasting peers. Much love to all my fellow Spanish speakers. Much love to all my fellow football players. Much love to all my fellow whatever. You're just referring specifically to people who do that same activity. Your peers, let's say. So she learned more from her fellow students than she did her teacher. Because when you're in class, you watch the mistakes that your fellow students are making. They correct your mistakes. You guys work through problems together, meaning that you work together to find a solution to the problem. Right, you have an intimate empathy and compassion for each other's struggle. Now, earlier in this clip, she said struggling, which is a verb, but it's also a noun. So if you have compassion for each other's struggle, in this case, it's a noun, and you're saying you have compassion for each other's difficult situations, the difficulties that you're both facing. And it's a level of compassion an understanding that, frankly, a teacher just doesn't have. Now, frankly is a word that we use to, how would I define frankly? It's basically like, it's another word for honestly. If you say something in a very frank manner, or if you say frankly before you state your opinion, you're expressing the idea that you're being very honest. You don't mean to be rude. You don't mean to be disrespectful, but you would like to put it very plainly, very clearly and honestly. So she learned more from her students, and she developed more compassion and understanding with her fellow students. And it's a level of compassion that, frankly or honestly, a teacher just doesn't have, because they're a teacher, not a student. And strangely, the majority of language teachers have never learned a foreign language, which is fucking wild. Like, you would never learn programming from somebody who's never written a software program, right? You would never learn how to fix a car from somebody who doesn't even know what the tools are called, you know? But for some reason, this has nothing to do with the episode. I just think that's interesting that so many language teachers have never learned a foreign language. And that's what really, that's what Miriam is talking about. She's saying that people who are actively in the struggle with you, you can actually understand and learn from them more than the teacher who's kind of like on the outside. He or she is just not in the same position. All right. Now, before we get off the rails, let me just play this last paragraph before we continue.
You work through the problems together. You have an intimate empathy and compassion for each other's struggle as you learn this that the teacher, frankly, just doesn't have. So you don't need to see the people who are at your level who also don't understand it or don't know it as incapable of teaching you. Quite the opposite, I think.
All right, so she finishes by saying, you don't need to think of the people who are at your level or your fellow students as people who are incapable of teaching you. Or in other words, people who cannot teach you. If you are incapable of doing something, it means that you don't have the ability to do something. You cannot do something. And she says, you don't need to think about them in that way. It's quite the opposite, actually. So when you hear somebody say quite the opposite, they're just emphasizing the fact that it is the exact opposite of what you might think. So most people will think, oh, he's a student, she's a student, so there's no way that I can learn from them. They're on the same level as me. But it's quite the opposite. It's actually the opposite of what you're thinking. And so when we say quite the opposite, we're just emphasizing the fact that it is the opposite. It's a relatively formal phrase, but not so formal that it sounds strange to people. It's totally normal, all right? Is that contradictory? It's normal and formal. Things can be formal and normal at the same time, right? You get what I'm saying? So then she goes on to, I think I might have stopped it there. Hang on. And sure, maybe you could. Yeah, I stopped it there. So let me go back a few seconds and play this last part.
As incapable of teaching you. Quite the opposite, I think. And sure, maybe occasionally you'll learn something that is just actually wrong. Like, they will have led you astray because they thought it was right. But like, in general, you stretch from learning with other people who are learning.
All right. So her last idea, she's saying, still talking about learning from other students. She says, sure, maybe occasionally or every once in a while or from time to time, you will learn something that is just actually wrong. Maybe one of these students misunderstood something and they taught you something that is just wrong. Sure, occasionally that might happen. You know, they will have led you astray. This is a phrase that you won't hear every day. So I wouldn't say that you need to like memorize this, but just so you understand what she is saying, to lead someone astray basically means to lead them in the wrong direction. If you are going astray, it means that you are veering or slightly turning off the path and going in the wrong direction. So if you lead someone astray, you are guiding them in the wrong direction. That's basically what she's saying. So yeah, occasionally they might teach you something wrong. They might lead you astray just because they misunderstood and they thought it was right. But in general, you stretch from learning with other people who are learning. And when she says stretch, she's not talking about like stretching before you exercise so that you don't hurt yourself. It's more of a metaphorical idea, like stretching the muscle that is your mind. You stretch and you grow. Your brain expands. Your abilities expand. Your understanding expands when you're learning with other people who are learning, for all the reasons that she mentioned in the video clip. All right, my friend, now I'm going to leave timestamps in the description of this episode. So if you want to go back to the beginning of the audio clip and play it from start to finish without explanations or interruptions, you can do that. But at this point, I'm just going to move on to a summary of the three lessons that I think are extremely important for anyone learning anything, but definitely a foreign language. So the first lesson to take away from this clip is that whenever you learn a new word or a phrase or expression, slang, whatever, a grammar rule, whatever it may be, you have to put it into practice immediately. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while now, this piece of advice probably sounds very familiar to you. I'm talking about everything in this clip I talk about all the time, which is why I was so excited to share this clip with you so you could hear somebody else that you don't know reaffirming these ideas, because it's universal, bro. I promise if you can apply these three lessons, you will learn quicker, more effectively, and have more fun doing it. So back to lesson one. If you learn a word or a phrase, put it into context. Don't just try to memorize the definition, cross your fingers, and then hope you remember the word the next time you need it in a conversation. You got to use it frequently. That's why I'm saying write in your journal, talk about this with your friends, talk to yourself, record yourself speaking, whatever you got to do, but you got to use the shit or you're going to lose the shit. That's why we say that. Use it or lose it. We actually say that in English. Use it or lose it. If you don't use it, you're going to forget it. You know? The easiest way to learn how to use something correctly is by using it with real people and then getting corrected. That's literally it. And I'd like to remind you, that's what you did with your first language, right? Little kids say grammatically incorrect things all the time and they're unaware of the fact that it's grammatically incorrect. And then their parents correct them. Happens all the fucking time. We just don't think about it that way because it's our first language. And for some reason, we forget that that is how we learn languages in the first place. And we think that we need to do a bunch of flashcards and memorize definitions and read gigantic lists of vocabulary. And then I'm just going to remember it hopefully in the future. But that's not how it works. You got to use it, get corrected, and then repeat that process endlessly. Endlessly. Even once you get to an advanced level, bro, you still have plenty of shit to learn. And if you stop using the language, you're going to forget everything that you learn. So the real takeaway is if you want to learn to speak a language fluently and naturally and confidently, you've got to use it every single day, even if it's just 30 minutes a day, even if it's just an hour a day, but you got to use the language regularly if you want to speak naturally and confidently. So lesson number two, the second thing to take away from this clip is talking around the ideas or the words that you simply can't express in detail. Another thing I've talked about a lot, man, like not having enough vocabulary is not an excuse for not speaking English. And I don't say that to be harsh. I don't say that to make you feel like you're a shitty student or anything like that. That's not the point. It's really just to get you to understand this is a liberating idea. This should be good news for you. Because maybe your vocabulary is elementary or it's basic, even if your comprehension is good. You just can't express yourself at a very high level. The good news is you can still have conversations, bro. You can still talk to people. You can express a lot more than you think you can if you just think differently. So maybe you don't have this specific word or this specific phrase, but if you just describe the idea with whatever words you do have, especially if you're talking to a native or an advanced speaker, they're going to get the idea of what you're saying. And in many cases, they'll give you the word that you're looking for. And then you learn a new word and then you put it into context. You practice with it and then you memorize it and now you just know a new word. But if every time you go to speak, you say, oh, I don't have enough vocabulary. I don't know the words. How can I speak English if I don't have vocabulary? Every time you say that, you're just reinforcing the belief that you have to be 100% fluent before you open your mouth, when that is literally impossible. Until they find a way to like plant chips in our brains that allow us to download information, it's impossible. It's impossible, bro. So you got to let go of that idea. And really, the exact opposite of that way of thinking is how you get to where you want to be. Even today, bro, I will get on an app like HelloTalk or Tandem or whatever, sitting at my computer with Google Translate open, talking to somebody, translating 60% of what I want to say just to make myself understood. There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, bro. That is how you are supposed to learn. And yes, it requires extra effort. It makes the conversation take much longer than it would take if you were at a more advanced level. But you're not at a more advanced level yet. The only way to get there is by continuing to practice, by talking around ideas and learning new words and expressions as you go along. Right? And by talking around ideas, when you don't know a specific word, it also allows you to exercise the vocabulary that you do have. So even if you don't know this word here, by trying to describe that word, you're still using the English language and all the words you do know to express yourself. You're practicing, bro. That's the whole point. So the main takeaway is just understand, just because you don't have a particular word or expression doesn't mean that you cannot have a conversation with somebody or that you cannot make yourself understood, because you can, bro. You can. There's so many tools available to you, and even just Google Translate and ChatGPT, which is free. You can make yourself understood. You just have to put in the work and take the time. That's it. So, lesson number three, the third thing to take away, another very important lesson for anybody learning anything, is that everyone knows something that you don't know. Everyone is a teacher. Not just people that went and studied at a university and got a piece of paper that says teacher on it. In fact, the people who didn't go to university, people who are just passionate about learning, people who are just, or even on the same level as you, like Miriam said in the clip, even other students can often teach you better than a teacher might. Because if we're talking about language, like I said a minute ago, a lot of language teachers have never learned a foreign language. They don't have that experience. They only know how to teach you based on the theory that was taught to them by another person who only knows theory. And yet, for some reason, people still look at teachers as if, oh, this is God and I must not disrespect or disobey God. But that's it. That's not the case. Even teachers don't know everything. Even teachers can learn from their students. I learn from my students all the time. So I think just changing the way you think about teachers, students, and learning in general is extremely important. Because a lot of people think if it's not coming from the mouth of a teacher, then I can't trust it. I can't believe it. I can't respect it. And that is not the case. A lot of people listening to this podcast speak Spanish as a first language. There are millions and millions of Spanish speakers all around the world, and many of them are learning English. So as a Spanish speaker, you may have never even considered the idea that somebody who speaks Spanish as a first language can actually teach you more effectively because they understand the way you think. They understand the way that you naturally want to structure a sentence, or why you're misusing this particular word, or which words are going to be more difficult for you to pronounce. They just have a deeper understanding of your brain, a deeper level of empathy. You see? And so therefore, they can help you more effectively than somebody who speaks Japanese and English and knows nothing about Spanish. I'm not saying that's always going to be the case. It's just a possibility that one should consider, you know? And this was the idea behind the community that I created on Discord, because so many people complain about not having enough money to pay a teacher, not having any friends to practice with, not knowing any other English speakers. And so I wanted to create some place online where people could come and practice with each other. And the challenge that we ran into is that most people who joined the community had that mindset. Like, oh, Tony needs to be here in order for me to learn. The teacher, the native, needs to be here if I'm going to learn something. I can't learn from all these other learners because they're just learning. What if we say something wrong and there's nobody here to correct us? Which is a totally understandable way of thinking. I'm just challenging you to adjust that way of thinking slightly and respect the fact that everybody knows something you don't. And even if they don't, there's very simple ways around that. Like in the context of learning in a community of other English learners, if neither one of you know for sure, then you can just search for the answer. Or in the case of my community, if you don't know for sure, just send me a message and I'll answer it when I get a chance. But you shouldn't use that as an excuse to not talk to anybody ever. Just when you have a doubt, write it down and then ask somebody when you get the chance. But you should still be practicing, you know? And really, language is learned in a community. I really believe that. Obviously, you only need one person to teach you a language. If you can talk to that person every day, that's fantastic. But what I think is even better is talking to a bunch of different people who are using different words. They have different accents, different dialects, different ways of thinking, different ideas, and just having countless conversations with all these different people. You're going to get to a point where you forget that you're learning this language and you're just having fun learning about life. That's exactly the way I try to produce the podcast, by the way. Because I don't want you to forget that you're here to study English. Just enjoy listening to something interesting, and you're going to learn English either way. And that's why I think, not just English, but language is learned better in a community. In fact, that's how you learned your first language. I say that all the time. Talking with your mom and dad, your siblings, your grandparents, your teachers, the bus driver, the cashiers, doctors, pharmacists, dentists, just talking to all these people. That is how you learned to speak your native language. But why would we not take the same approach when learning a foreign language? Doesn't make sense to me. Just doesn't make sense. So in summary, the main thing that you should take away from lesson three is that by struggling with other people, you learn with other people. You can learn from other people's mistakes. They can learn from yours. You can correct each other. You can support each other on this path that is quite challenging. Learning a language is not complicated, but it is a challenge. And when you have other people to do it with, so much more fun, so much more engaging. You learn so much more quickly. And that's true for any aspect of life, whether you're learning how to be a YouTuber or learning to be a programmer, learning how to play football, learning how to cook. It's just, generally speaking, more fun and engaging. And you learn a lot more when you do it with other people. So don't think that you got to be isolated while learning this language. Don't just say, I'm not good at talking to strangers. I don't have good communication skills. I don't have enough vocabulary. Instead, focus on the solution to those problems. Study the art of communication. Download a language exchange app or join a language learning community. If you have money, invest in a course or some private lessons and start to solve these problems. You know? Just some interesting stuff to think about, man. Now, if you enjoy this podcast and you want to learn more effectively with every episode, consider signing up for a membership on Patreon. Now, when you subscribe to the podcast, you'll get access to bonus podcast episodes along with transcripts of every episode and PDF study guides that will explain all the advanced words, phrases, and expressions with examples and things of that nature. And you'll get access to our community of English learners, and you can contact me directly anytime you got questions or doubts about the English language, or you just want to say what's up. So if that sounds interesting to you, click the link in the description and sign up on Patreon. But that's it for now, my friend. As always, I want to thank you for your time and attention. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Real English Radio. I'm your host, Tony Kaizen, and I'll talk to you soon. Peace.